Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, San Diego, California, Friday, January 29. Hello again, Orion Samuelson back with you. I'll be joined by Max Armstrong in a few minutes on our weekly get-together. But today, at the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, about 7,000 people involved in the beef cattle industry in the United States in attendance here in sunny San Diego. And I think some of those ranchers from Wyoming and Montana and North Dakota are enjoying the warmer temperatures and the sunshine. There's a lot to talk about at this convention, and we'll talk about it in a moment. But maybe there's even more to talk about in the stock market. My golly, we started at the beginning of January with just a terrible day. We end January with a pretty good day. Fourth quarter gross domestic product did miss estimates, but Microsoft came on strong in the market today. And at the end of the day, the Dow was up 2.5%. The S&P 500 up 2.5%. The NASDAQ up 2.3%. We saw the strength on Wall Street today after the Bank of Japan unexpectedly cut interest rates, and Microsoft led a major rally in technology shares that repaired some of the damage to the S&P 500's worst January since 2009. Because of the collapsing oil prices that have fed doubts about the health of the global economy, stocks have had a volatile start to the year. At one point last week, the S&P's loss for 2016 reached 11% before recovering to end the month down 5%. And the index rose 2.5% today. That's its strongest day since last December. So taking a look at the closing numbers today on Wall Street and the changes that we have seen today, the Dow Industrial Average ended the day at 16,466 after gaining 396 points. The S&P 500 gained 46 points today to end at 1940. And the NASDAQ Composite ended the day up 107 points at 4613, while VIX, the Volatility Index, dropped nearly 2.25% and ended the day at 20.20. Now, for the month, the Dow lost 5.5%. The S&P 500 fell 5.1%, and the NASDAQ dropped 7.9%. For the week, the Dow did gain 2.3%, the S&P 500 added 1.7%, and the NASDAQ for the week went up 0.5%. But one other note here, the NASDAQ Composite posted its biggest monthly percentage loss since May of 2010. And the S&P 500 had the worst January since 2009. Xerox, part of the factor that helped the market today, up after a deal with Carl Icahn to split that company in two. So it turned out to be a very good last trading day of the month after some very bad trading days during the month. There will be hope over the weekend that maybe the first month was the worst we'll see. That, of course, remains to be seen. Well, the Cattlemen's Convention here in San Diego, California, the Cattlemen's Association does have a new president. The new president, Kansas cattleman Tracy Bruner, and I talked to Tracy as he took over the one-year term of president of the NCBA. I asked what he thought would be the major challenges for the cattle industry during his one-year term as president.
Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, TPP, ratification of that is one of our top priorities this year. We're gonna push as hard as we can to bring that into a vote in Congress this year. We're also working with the Environmental Protection Agency, or the Waters of the U.S. is one of the big items that we've been pushing back hard. But we think that the WOTUS rule is an infringement on our private property rights. And we're going to continue to work on that. We're currently in litigation. We have a stay trying to slow down and stop the implementation of the Waters of the U.S. rule.
Trans-Pacific, how important is that to our beef export industry?
Orion, that's big. In fact, it will be the foundation for the next generation of America's beef producers. TPP would tie together 40% of the global economy into a free trading area. It would put the United States, Japan, Australia, many other countries into a free trade area that would allow America's beef producers to compete on a level playing field with access to all those growing markets and some of the best markets that we have today. You know, currently into Japan, U.S. beef pays a 38% tariff, and our strong competitor, the Australians, enjoy only a 10% tariff. So we're at an extreme disadvantage, and even at that, Japan is our biggest volume, our biggest value beef customer, importing over $1 billion worth of beef last year.
And they like that good American beef. Finally, Tracy, let's find out a little bit about the new president of the NCBA. What's your role in the cattle industry?
Well, Orion, we're a fourth-generation family operation in the western Flint Hills area of Kansas. We are quite diversified, not unusual for Kansas cattle and farming operations, but we have a seed stock operation producing bulls and females that go around the United States, farming and ranching, raising crops of corn, wheat, and soybeans and alfalfa, Flint Hills grazing operation running yearlings on the Flint Hills of Kansas, and then an 8,000-head cattle finishing yard. So we have a family corporation, myself and two brothers, and we have the fifth generation of several sons coming on behind us. So we're a family operation, but we work together and really enjoy our time and working in the America's cattle business.
And you take that beef animal from the beginning all the way through to the end?
Oh, yes, we do. We're, as I said, we're highly diversified. Everything from conception to consumption represented in our cattle business.
The new president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Tracy Bruner, from the state of Kansas. Colin Woodall is the Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He's based in Washington, D.C., but he keeps a close watch on the economic situation facing cattle producers of all kinds across the nation. I asked him about the year that just ended.
Oh my goodness, it's been pretty wild when you look at the markets. You know, a year ago when we were in San Antonio, everybody was riding high. We were looking at some great prices, and then things at the end of the year started to go down, and the pressure really got tough. A portion of that was the fundamental changes. The fact of the matter is it started raining in cattle country. That always has an impact on the marketplace. But one of the things that we have concern about right now is not so much the fundamentals, it's a lot of the variability, the volatility that we have seen in the marketplace in just one trading day. You know, we have had no changes in some cases on the fundamental side, but yet we have gone limit up or limit down. So we have a concern on what high-frequency trading is doing to try to drive that market, and we're trying to address that here in San Diego.
And we've seen the cattle market follow Wall Street a little bit, haven't we?
Oh, we have. You know, it's not unusual that we're down, because when you look at the stock market as a whole, when you look at other commodities, everything has got that downward pressure. You know, our concern is more about making sure that the cattle futures really work the way that they should and the way we need them to, because they are very important risk management tools. And we can always figure out how to manage downward times as long as the tools work the way they should.
Question I'm often asked is, are we near the bottom?
that's a question that I'm not even going to try to answer, because there's no telling what's going to happen. I think we need to be prepared for this to continue to go down. That's not what our industry wants to hear. That's not what we want to see. But the reality is, as we continue to grow our herd, that downward pressure is going to be there. Even though we have great demand from the consumer, those market issues are going to work against us a little bit more.
Colin Woodall, the Vice President of Government Affairs for the NCBA, based in Washington, D.C. He's been keeping a close watch on this cattle economy for years. Always a pleasure to get his thoughts and his ideas on what's happening in the cattle industry. Now, if I might, as Paul Harvey, my late friend, used to say, partly personal, please. This morning at the Beef Awards program that's held annually as part of this convention, they honor a lot of producers and market people. But as Gloria and I attended that breakfast this morning and went through the program, saw what they were going to do, turned out there was one thing on the program that was not in the printed program. And I had the surprise of my life when Chase Adams, who was director of communications for NCBA, called me and Gloria on stage and presented me with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NCBA. And that award is one of the most beautiful leather briefcases that a friend of Chase Adams, I guess, makes. And has the date, it has the name, it has the Lifetime Achievement Award. What a surprise. I said to Chase, you know, as a media person, I'm supposed to know everything going on. I didn't have any idea at all that this was going to happen and you didn't put it in the program. He said, well, we did that to really make it a total surprise. So it was a real gotcha. And to the members of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, I say thank you very much. It's a great career that lets me enjoy the company of a lot of great people. And then at the same time, they present me with the Lifetime Achievement Award. Max Armstrong getting ready to join us to talk markets a little differently this week on The Markets. So stay with us for Max and his guest when we continue with The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Ray Brownfield, Land Pro LLC. From time to time, our guest here on the radio, and we always enjoy your visit because we learn something from you about the land market, what's happening. It's a very hot topic of discussion always in the small town coffee shop, even when the land market maybe isn't rip-roaring wild, but you still have the discussions that take place there. How much are we down on the land price on farmland in our region now, Ray?
It depends so much on soil quality, location, income, you know, producing opportunities. But let's say on the high quality, what we call in this region the Class A, in the calendar year of 2015, maybe down 5% in that range. It really depends. Now, when you get into the land, it's got some drainage problems, some non-tillable, some other issues like that. It can be down as much as 10 or 12%. Again, it depends on the area so much, but that's kind of an average right now.
I have heard some estimates from so-called experts, people that really watch the ag economic scene, that after all is said and done, we could see maybe a 20 to 25% retracement in the value of farmland in our region. Do you concur with that, or you think that's a little bit much?
I think it's possible, Max. Think about it, though. In a five-year period of time, each year, we went up 10 to 15%. So that's a retracement, even at 25%. that's not a terrible shrinkage if you look at the trend that we're into. So, yes, that's possible. I suppose if commodity prices stay relatively like they are even in 2017, yeah, I think that's very possible that could possibly happen. And also with interest rates maybe increasing, it'll probably slow this market down to some degree. But nevertheless, I will tell you this, there's still high demand for high-quality ground right now.
We shouldn't forget, I suppose, that the Federal Reserve has indeed enhanced the opportunity to buy land on credit in recent years for a number of years. But even as rates rise, I mean, they sure haven't risen much yet and are not expected to for some time, right?
I agree with that. I don't think it's going to have a major impact until you would get up into that 5, 6, 7% range. Today, we're far below that. And, you know, I just saw today in a paper on 30-year mortgage rates, and I suppose that is more maybe for the housing industry, it actually went down here recently. So I think that to do a major increase in the interest rates with the given economy we now have and may have for the foreseeable future, I don't think they're going to want to do that very bad.
There are still some parcels of very good farmland that are coming onto the market. And I know you've been involved in a couple of these here of late. A great tillable land with fine productivity, well-drained soils. What's happening when that land comes onto the market? Why is it being sold?
Well, usually it's families of whom have gotten to the point that there's a number of people involved, maybe in the family, and they're looking to divide, to take that money in other directions. And some may do a 1031 in other land, perhaps. But to have a number of people having undivided interest sometimes creates some issues within the family from a management viewpoint and so on and so forth. Lots of times we see that. We see the estates that are being settled, too, that the people, the only income they've got maybe would be from the liquidity of that farm. So that's usually the reason. I don't see yet today any issues with problems and bankruptcies and things like that in the farming sector. We're starting to hear maybe down the road some of that could come, but I think we're a ways off from some of that, frankly.
And there are a number of farmers still able to buy land and are more than happy to do so when it comes on the market near them or perhaps in a 1031 exchange you were talking about they need to reinvest?
There really are. I was at an auction recently in Bloomington, Illinois. 1,448 acres came up in various parcels, 14 parcels in three geographic locations. And the farmers were together in their given regions to buy that land. And they really were good at that. They really didn't overpay, I don't think, in today's market, but I think they paid a good market level to get it, to add to their existing operation, which tells me there's still strong demand. And I think there's still, we're not in terrible, terrible shape economically. If this keeps on going, it may change that, but there's still demand.
As you know, I was in New Zealand recently, and I heard from a farmer who said he wanted to be with me. He planned to make that trip. He wanted to see New Zealand's agriculture, but during the time that he would have been there, there was an 80-acre parcel next to him that was going to be sold at auction. And he said he wanted to be sitting right there in the crowd to participate and perhaps buy that parcel. We still see that, don't we?
We really do, particularly if it's a smaller piece, like an 80 that's adjacent to your own farm. You know, it probably makes sense to try to join it if you possibly can. It may never come on the market again in generations to come. And even on the bigger tracts that we work with, we're seeing the same feeling that, you know, it's really a high-quality farm. It may never come on the market for gosh only knows how long from now. So those are things people look at. And, yeah, the market's not at 14 or 15,000 acre anymore, maybe as it was on the top end, but still not unusual to hear 11.5 to the 12 range for the really, really good stuff, even 13 in some cases.
I was just going to ask you what kind of prices we've been hearing of late. Now, would this be land that's potentially in the path of progress? You know, it's prime for urban sprawl not too far down the road.
Not at all. In fact, that probably doesn't have much bearing on today's buying. People know it, of course, and they're thinking maybe several generations down, maybe their grandkids, but they're not buying for that reason. They're looking at it from the viewpoint of what it'll do for them over their lifetimes and their children's lifetimes to add to what they have to really keep staying in a good farming business.
You were involved in an auction, I know. I was reading here a while back you had a parcel that involved both productive farmland and recreational land, and it was not far out of the metropolitan area. That's kind of a win-win, I could imagine, although there are probably farmers who want to just have productive land. They just want good, flat, well-drained land on which to grow crops. But as far as that outside investor who might want a little piece of ground out here and a place to go visit and picnic at the woods and hunt in the woods and fish in the creek, or do you say creek, something like that I could imagine would be appealing.
It's a special market, and you're exactly right. The true farmer type of a buyer may not be as enhanced with that sort of a situation because they're buying on tillable acres, what will really make them some money in the long pull. But there is a special market out there for recreational property, which would have some income producing potential with the tillable ground, like the one farm that I currently am working with right now. And so we're seeing some people, particularly the Chicago area and so on and so forth, say, you know what? That's not that far out. It wouldn't be too bad to have my own place I can go to, hunt some deer, have a picnic, and have it quiet, but also have some income. So, yes, there is a market for that.
I remember in Bloomington, Illinois, sitting in the dentist's chair down there some 35 years ago, Dr. Denny McDonald, the late Dr. McDonald, for whom my wife worked. He was very, very wired in the community and watched what was happening with farmland. And Dr. McDonald one day said to me while he had me in the chair and various tools in my mouth and both of his hands in there, said, "Did you hear the Arabs are buying some land out here east of town? They've come in to buy some good, prime McLean County farmland." And that was always the rumor. The Brazilians were buying, the Japanese were buying. And in fact, back in those days, Ray, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, by law, started tracking these foreign purchases. They still do, don't they?
They still do. And in fact, if there is someone internationally that comes in and buys land, there's a special form that has to go to the FSA, USDA, letting that fact be known that it is being tracked. And there's even certain states in the United States that do not still allow foreign investment or corporation for that matter. But that's still being watched. Yes, it is. But we really don't see much. You know, somebody might say, what about the Chinese? Well, right now we know they've got some financial issues, but that'll probably pass as time goes on. But they still have a tremendous need for food and fiber over there. And we haven't seen, to my knowledge, I've heard of some issues or things out there of people, but I really haven't heard of anything here in our region, in the Midwest particularly, of any major purchases from the Chinese. Now, that may not be true, but I don't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
In the Southwest, I saw the story a few days ago that Saudi interests were buying farmland. They were doing so for the production of forage, that they were shipping that hay to their herds in Saudi Arabia. And it's become controversial because some of the locals there are saying, well, in essence, they are shipping our water, because they're using this valuable resource, the water, to produce that hay and to ship to the dairy herds over there. One could imagine that could be a hot-button issue. But right at the moment, you don't feel in this part of the country there's any widespread foreign investment in good prime farmland.
Certainly not to my knowledge. Not that I know everything out there, but I really haven't heard it. And I would usually hear about it if it was going on. So now sometimes those foreign entities will go through various layers of folks and try to, you know, not be fully discoverable, if you will. And that's possible. But again, usually we hear about it somewhere along the in our industry.
What about the entertainers? I remember you telling me a story a couple of years ago about a very well-known comedian, actor, who wanted to go out and buy some farmland. He was a very shrewd buyer, I remember you sharing with me, as you took him past the fields, and I think he took a pass in that particular instance on buying. But do you still see some high-profile individuals who say, yeah, I want a piece of ground?
We do. In that particular case, he did end up buying some ground in central Illinois, and looking backwards, he did a good job. The realtor that represented him did a nice job as well. So that can happen. It's a highly specialized group of people as well. They have their own business agents, and of course, everybody's trying to get into their money. But I've seen a lot of that in California in the vineyards industry, because that's more of a romantic type of an ownership, to say that you have a vineyard up in Napa or in that area. We see some of them in the country people into Texas, into the ranches and that sort of thing, but they're comfortable with the ranching industry because they're part of it. So we do see that. I haven't really seen too much here in this region that I'm aware of again, but certainly it's something that I know they do look at, and they do from time.
Ray Brownfield, long involved in farm real estate, the farm real estate business as a realtor and as a farmland manager. We appreciate all of the years of expertise you bring to the microphone when we have a chance to visit. Land Pro LLC is the firm, right?
Thank you, Max. It certainly is.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, we enter a new month, and maybe it's a better one for the markets all the way around. Let's hope so, because the cattle industry does need less volatility than it experienced the past 2 or 3 months. I heard that a great deal here in San Diego at the Cattlemen's Convention. So where do we start trading the market on Monday? Well, let's look at February live cattle. We'll start the week at $134.80 a hundredweight after the market lost 62 cents today. The April feeder cattle contract will start Monday at $156.20, down $2.75 for the day. The hog market February lean contract will start the week at $65.62 after gaining 32 cents today. But it's the cattle market that, as one rancher said, I'm just not used to this kind of volatility in the marketplace. And sell stops and fund liquidation today giving way to cash price optimism. And that lifted the contracts from session lows. And so packers in Texas raise bids for market ready or cash cattle to $134 to $135 per hundredweight. And that's up from $130 to $132 earlier this week, compared to last week when cash cattle moved at $130 to $134 per hundredweight. The grain market. Well, there were some bargain hunters in the market today, apparently, and soybeans rebounded in the market to end the week after the March contract neared a three-week low, and the corn was higher too, but weekly U.S. exports of corn failed to impress traders. And then the wheat story, Russia likely to leave the wheat export tax unchanged. And that was not greeted with a lot of enthusiasm by grain traders here. But for the day, we ended pretty well. We ended, let's take a look at March wheat. It'll start trading Monday at 479 and a quarter after gaining 6¾ cents a bushel today. March corn will start the week at 372 a bushel after gaining 6 cents. And new crop December corn will start the week at 393 and a quarter, that after gaining 5¼ cents today. Soybeans, pretty good day. Bargain hunters in the market. March soybeans will start trading Monday at $8.82 and a quarter cents a bushel after gaining 13 and three-quarter cents a bushel in the week-ending trade today. The cattle herd, what about it? It's growing. It's getting bigger. And beef prices will keep trending lower. That's the word from analysts here in San Diego after the government's and a semi-annual cattle inventory report today showed the U.S. cattle herd as of January 1st grew 3% from a year ago to a five-year high. And even cattlemen said, yeah, we got some rain. We have got pretty good pastures. Corn, soybeans, priced pretty favorable for feeding cattle. And as a result of this combination, I guess ranchers decided to increase numbers in their herds, rebuilding, aiding recovery of the herd that at one point in 2014 had fallen to a 63-year low after years of drought. And as a result, those retail beef prices have declined 7 months in a row. to $5.97 per pound in December versus $6.31 a pound a year earlier. So anyway, we wind it down with the cattlemen. I would say they're not in a terrible mood. They're dealing with it and seem to be dealing with it a little better than we have in previous years. It's been fun being with them. I thank them again for the award. And now on behalf of Max and me, thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.